Welcome to the Department of Agricultural Economics podcast. This is your host, Jessica Eyes, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Ken Foster, who is the head of the Department of Agricultural Economics here at Purdue University. How are you, Ken?
I'm doing very well, Jessica. How are you?
I'm good. It's a beautiful fall day. No rain in sight.
It is a beautiful, and it's been unusual. A beautiful fall period for farmers for harvesting. So I think quite a blessing given the amount of rain that we had earlier in the summer.
A bit of a contrast.
It is, it is. In fact, I think the grass in my yard has pretty much turned brown. It's been so dry. But you know, when it's time to harvest and plant crops, sometimes that can be a great thing. And that kind of leads into our topic today. If you want to introduce our guest.
I would be happy to. We actually had a couple of requests for this, for a podcast on this particular topic. And that's why we brought in Dr. Michael Langemeyer to join us, who is a faculty member here in the Department of Agricultural Economics. And he's going to discuss some issues of crop insurance.
Yeah, and some of the new policies and some of the tricks of the trade, I guess, for farmers in terms of what a year like this year brings to them. Michael, good to have you with us.
Yeah, good afternoon.
How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Enjoying the fall?
Yes, very much so.
So maybe Michael, set the stage for us, because this is an interesting year in crop farming.
Crop insurance is always a very important farm safety net, but this year has been very interesting, particularly in Indiana and Ohio, in the eastern Corn Belt, because there's so much variability in corn yields. You've got corn yields all the way from basically nothing all the way to above trend in different parts of Indiana and Ohio, for that matter. And so this is a very interesting year, because there's going to be some people that are going to take advantage of crop insurance to the full extent, and there's others that are not, that perhaps we're expecting to after the very wet June we had. But things turned out a little better than they thought they were going to, and are not going to have to use crop insurance.
So what got us here? You know, what happened?
Well, first of all, like you were indicating earlier, I was indicating too, that we had just a very, very wet June. I don't know the precise precipitation, but it was well above average. And so we had a lot of people that were planting late, replanting, and in some cases that worked. In some cases they got it planted, the stands are thin, and the yields are just not there. And so that's what's creating all this variability in corn yields in particular. There's some in soybeans, but I think the soybeans have been a pleasant surprise for a lot of people. They were planted late, and particularly in the central part of Indiana. But for the most part, soybeans have been better than people thought they were going to be. Corn, not so much.
Okay. So low yields, low production. We're going to have any higher prices?
Yeah, when we're looking at crop insurance products, it's important to note that there's two different types of products. There's a lot of different products. It gets very complicated here, but let's get out of the weeds and just back up and talk
about the major
types of products. There's a yield protection product that protects you against low yields, like some people are going to have, and particularly with corn. But there's also a revenue protection product that protects people from low yields and low prices. When I say low prices, that means the price declines from the spring to the fall. That's not going to play that much this year. I think the harvest price is going to be lower than the projected price, but that's not where the real gain from crop insurance is going to be for the revenue protection folks. It's going to be on yield. And so both the yield protection products and the revenue protection products, if they get indemnity payments, will be based on the yields.
Something I think that's really interesting about this subject, because I come from a non-ag background, and when I first heard of crop insurance, it was very foreign to me, but understanding it now, having spent some time in agriculture, for a lot of people, they don't understand that the weather, nobody's salary outside of agriculture, very few people's salary outside of agriculture is dictated by the weather patterns.
Yes,
it is a very
unique product, and it's difficult for farmers to understand, let alone people outside of agriculture. But yes, that's the primary reason why a lot of farmers really like crop insurance. In any given year in Indiana, 75 to 80% of the corn and soybean acres are insured. And so it is a very good safety net, because like 2012, we had very low yields in some parts of the state. Crop insurance kicks in and provides that safety net. And the same is going to be the case this year in some places with low corn yields. It's going to provide a safety net.
Nice. Yeah, of course, if I make wiper blades, I don't get any subsidy or any insurance when there's a drought, right? I mean,
construction projects. I mean, there's other industries.
Okay, there are other industries, but I guess I'm thinking.
Well, but we don't eat wiper blades, right? I mean, so if you think about, what's the motivation for having some sort of program, which is partially supported by our tax dollars through, some government subsidies, it's really because, it's about our food supply and food security and some of those issues, and not just our own, but I think probably from a global point of view. I think as a country, we recognize we're blessed with great cropland and weather to produce surplus food, and providing food around the world has strategic advantage to us, right? I mean, hungry people are not typically happy people. And so we would like to keep as much happiness in the world that we live in as possible.
And I also don't think we want to see our farmers go bankrupt because of one bad year.
Yeah, so, that's a tricky one, right? I mean, Michael might want to weigh in on this, but it's very rare that good farmland's going to go unfarmed. So if a farmer goes bankrupt, it's not like that's a food security issue.
Yes.
But there are costs to those kinds of transactions and foreclosures and, those kinds of events. They do create a cost on society. So to some extent, balancing that has a value.
This is a tricky conversation.
How
do you deal with this?
I usually don't get that question because I typically am talking to agribusiness people and farmers that really like this program. And so they're not asking the whys and wherefores related to why we have this policy. They just think this is a great policy.
Yeah. And there's some price stability aspect to it,
definitely,
too, I think, from social point of view. I mean, I think, for our hope that we have broad listeners beyond, farmers out there, that, talking about these sorts of things is important to help people understand why do we support agriculture when we don't support the wiper blade industry, for example.
Well, I can tell you that my mom listens to these.
Well, that's great.
She
good
is not
for her.
From an agriculture
Hello, Mrs. Ives. We're glad to have you as one of our listeners.
And it definitely only kicks in low revenue years. Let's assume the revenue protection products are by far the most common. And again, those are protecting you against drop in price and drop in yields. They're by far the most uncommon in the Corn Belt. And it only kicks in really severe years. If you go back 20 years, for example, there might be 3 years out of that 20 where it's kicked in for corn and two or three for soybeans. And so it's not like somebody's getting an indemnity payment every year. You're really protecting yourself against that year where you have a 30, 40, 50% drop in yield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really interesting stuff. So I'm going to interject this just because I really like thinking about these things. But there was a famous agricultural economist. I think we can claim him as an agricultural economist, John Kenneth Galbraith. He was, maybe a little bit more in the general economics area too. But he was an advisor to many presidents on agricultural policy, FDR and Kennedy and some others. And one of his arguments was always having some sort of protection for farmers, had a lot of value, not just in terms of these things we've talked about, but also in terms of efficiency of resource allocations by farmers, because it's a very risky environment. So they tend to respond in risk-averse ways, which means, boy, if I'm facing yield risk, then maybe I should put on a little extra fertilizer or something to make sure that, I get the best crop I can get out of this. And so by providing them with a little bit of insurance, they'll behave a little bit more in a socially responsible way. And it's good for the environment, it's good for the economy, and good for the farmers, really.
I love that, the understanding of incentives and economics is really good.
No, that's a very important point, because that is exactly what would happen, is they probably would put on more inputs in some cases than they would otherwise without crop insurance, some cases less. So it would be much more difficult for them to come up with a yield goal in order to make seeding decisions and fertilization decisions without crop insurance.
Yeah, risk has a cost, and so these kinds of programs reduce that.
Let's
risk.
Talk a little bit about differences in risk aversion among farmers, Ken.
Sure.
And there's a lot of difference in risk aversion among farmers. Some people really don't like risk, and so they want very high levels of production, just like with your car. They'll pay for a higher coverage level. Some people, they just want protection from that really bad year, like 2012, for example, where yields in some counties were 50% below the trend yield. And so there's all, and everybody else in between. And so crop insurance works really nice for these different types of people, because the people that are very risk averse can increase their coverage level. The coverage level for risk protection, for example, goes from 50% to 85%. Somebody that's really risk averse or has a lender that's really, really doesn't want them to fail and wants them to have more protection will pick that 80 to 85% protection level, whereas someone that's just trying to protect against that disaster maybe will pick 70% to 75%. Usually below 70% is not picked in the Corn Belt. Go to the Western Corn Belt, Western part of the Corn Belt and the Great Plains, the coverage levels are a little bit lower because it's even more risky out there. But I think that's a very important point. Is we've got this product that's really good for risk averse people that pick that higher coverage level, and it's also good for people that don't have not as afraid of risk. And that they're willing to pick a coverage level that's a little bit lower, maybe 70 to 75%. You might ask, well, why doesn't everybody pick the high coverage level? Well, it's just like car insurance and health insurance. Higher coverage level, higher premium.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You pay. It's a market, isn't it? Isn't it fascinating? Markets
amazing
work.
How that works.
Markets work. And so Michael, thinking about this from a more general farm management point of view, if I were a farmer out there trying to make decisions in this risky environment, crop insurance is a great instrument to help alleviate some of that. Are there other things that, you know, farmers can do to try and balance some of this risk that they're facing from the weather or other uncontrollable factors?
Well, there's a couple things I want to point out in particular I think are very important. One of the things that we've been talking about in farm management ever since farm management started 60, 70, 80 years ago was diversification. So one of the things that farmers can do is pick crops carefully, pick crop rotations carefully, because some crop rotations are going to have less risk than other crop rotations. And so that strategy's been with us a long time and continues to be a very important strategy. Another thing is to think about leverage. One of the ways you can really increase risk in agriculture is to have a high debt to asset ratio or borrow a lot of money based on your asset base. And so somebody that's a little bit more afraid of risk is going to want to keep very careful tabs on that debt situation, because that's one way to increase variability and returns very quickly. And that's true in agriculture, but also outside of agriculture, is to have high debt levels. And so that's another area they need to pay particularly close attention to.
This has been really interesting. Do you have any last questions?
Fascinating topic. No, I don't think so. Michael, any final comments that we haven't talked about?
No, I think that covers it.
Although I'm sure we could spiral down rabbit
holes. I'm sure we could talk.
Stack of papers here.
Sure, we could talk for hours on this and related topics. We're not even going to dig into, farm program payments. But again, those are going to be a little bit variable over space this year too, with depending on county yields.
Yeah, we should note that there's really two safety net programs. One is the government program payments through ARC County. That's by far the most common in Indiana, where it's kind of like the revenue protection coverage. And so if revenue drops significantly, this ARC County payments will kick in. They're probably going to kick in 15 for corn and 16 for both corn and soybeans. And in addition to that, of course, is the crop insurance program that we've been talking about. The programs, even though the programs are somewhat related, they really work independently. Mm-hmm. And so we encourage producers to participate in both, because they're both good safety net, and you can't just participate in one without the other, because your safety net's not going to be near as good as it would be otherwise.
Yeah, so it sounds like another podcast.
That's what I was going to say. So podcast 2 coming up. Okay. Well, again, I want to thank all of you for listening to our podcast today. Our guest is Dr. Michael Langemeyer, who's a faculty member here in the Department of Agricultural Economics at Purdue University.
Thanks for listening to us, and like us on Facebook and visit our website at www.agecon.purdue.edu.